Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire.
And I'm Robert Bucciolato.
Robert, let's pick up where we left off last week. Walt Disney has three ready-made rides for his new Florida attraction and for the opening of that park, which is slated for the early 1970s. This is after the World's Fair is dismantled in 1965. He's got the Carousel of Progress, which is the longest-running show in American history. He's got the It's a Small World, and he has the foundation for what becomes the Hall of Presidents. But unfortunately, in 1966, Walt passes away, and he passed away months after making a really interesting, detailed presentation has been preserved on video that I think many of our listeners have probably seen. You and I have both probably seen multiple times, which included Epcot and the layout of the experimental prototype community of tomorrow, as well as everything else in that Florida land. And the Walt Disney World Airport also, by the way, was featured in that video. So take us through that.
So as we mentioned in the last episode, Walt Disney is moving away from entertainment. He's moving towards the realm of brick and mortar. He's trying to develop and maintain a physical empire, so to speak. And we now are in the world where we're like, empire, and it has sort of these negative connotations. But what he was really trying to do was develop a communal sense of America that was rooted in a nostalgic impulse and love of the country, which simultaneously has a desire to move forward in a more technologically impressive future. That was sort of what his mindset was in the 1960s. That's why he became such a great innovator in every avenue of entertainment. We talked about the fact that he pretty much created the natural animal documentary format. Basically, every single National Geographic and Discovery documentary owes its existence to Walt Disney and his documentary films of the 1950s. He became one of the most successful fixtures in early American television, won numerous Emmy Awards, and he was making incredible live-action films. And what he basically wanted to do was he wanted to take every aspect of his professional portfolio and put it in the actual American life. He wanted place that is communal, that is modern, but is developing towards a radical new way of urbanized living. And he wanted to put the Disney stamp on it by having an amusement park right next door to it. And so we are of course talking about the original prototype city that was Epcot, which was the Florida project, and it didn't happen. The reason why it didn't happen was Walt Disney developed lung cancer and died. That's pretty much the only reason why it didn't happen. Had he lived into the 1970s, there would be a community. I'm sure it wouldn't have been called Epcot, but there would have been a community right outside of Disney World that would have been based on a clean, urbanized, mechanized manner of living. And if you watch the documentary, which I don't know if maybe we should post it on Florida Squeeze, but it's very detailed. There is a public transit system that is sort of designed as the monorails, which are very world famous at both parks, in particular the Walt Disney World Resort. That would be a form of public transit there was high rises that were going to be basically a cradle to grave mode of living. There were going to it almost kind of felt like Logan's Run in a way, you know, these sort of like bubble cities of tomorrow, where there's this one spire that contains and one citadel that contains everything you need in a life. You don't even need to leave your house. It's all there. That model is in the People Mover, in Tomorrowland. But, basically, by 1965, Disney had decided, this is what we're going to do, Roy. Roy was like, you're absolutely out of your mind. Roy was the money man. He did not like the idea at all for this future world. He thought it was his brother dreaming in the clouds. He was on board for a bigger, larger Disney World that they could slowly develop over the next decade. He did not like the Florida project at all. That must be stated, especially when you figure out how Epcot turns out. You have to understand that the original themes of Walt were not put into execution the way he wanted it, and it was due primarily to the corporate mindset of the company after Walt died. So Walt forms a very collaborative and open relationship with the governor at the time, Hayden Burns. They make a big public announcement that Disney is coming here. We talked a lot about that, and we talked a lot about the legislation that took place after that announcement. One of the things that kind of began to cause this process to unravel is in 1966, Walt develops lung cancer, and at the same time, the company starts to have some sort of creative instability. It wouldn't develop into a full-blown issue like it would a decade later, but the chinks in the armor were there right now, and it began to be really one of the first times where the creative elements in the company began to question the feasibility for achieving Walt's ideas. And so for the last year of his life, there began to take root in the company a Roy team and a Walt team. And it wasn't a full-on, you know, knockout, drag-out like it would be years later between, you know, Michael Eisner and Roy's son, Roy E. Disney. But it became pretty obvious that there were impulses inside the company to rein in Walt. Now, at the same time, the legislature had given Disney a blank check, lock, stock, and barrel. This whole section of Central Florida was his. They were saying, please come to Florida, build, make a place where people will want to come. We'll give you whatever you want. Well, that was all well and good until Florida elected a crazy maverick Republican in Claude Kirk, and people weren't sure what Claude Kirk was going to do. So you had, at this time, a Disney that was fracturing ever so slightly about what they were going to do in Orlando. You had a Walt Disney that was starting to cough up blood, and you had a new governor that people weren't really sure was going to be so keen as the business-loving Hayden Burns was. Well, as it turns out, the Disney brothers went ahead and they basically wined and dined Claude Kirk. And Claude Kirk, as it turns out, he had a new bride, and he liked Hollywood, he liked the jet-setter lifestyle. So by the time he comes into office in 1967, he is very, very pro-Disney World. to say the least. But unfortunately, December 1966, Walt has a collapse. He goes into the hospital. It's obvious he has days to live. And by all accounts, he begs Roy to continue. Roy says he will. They're going to start the ground breaking on the site, the Orlando project soon, Florida project. And apparently the last day of his life was spent looking up at the ceiling tiles of his hospital room, mapping out what Disney World was going to be like. And once Walt dies, Roy decides, has a meeting with all of the shareholders, and he says, okay, we're moving forward with phase one, which is Disney World, phase two, which is the Florida project, to be determined, essentially. So then what they do is they start mapping out and looking at what land that they have, and they try to pinpoint geographically what's going to be the best spot to put down Cinderella's castle.
Interesting. So that takes us through to the construction phase, and as you mentioned, everything is not quite to Walt's vision, but it may not have gotten built at all without Roy. So as much as I think there were creative differences, Roy very much the economic business brain, Walt the creative force. And I should mention, Walt had actually bought Roy's shares of the company, a substantial percentage of Roy's shares, I want to say in the 1930s, that early. Yeah. I mean, that early on, there were some differences between the brothers. But I do think Roy, who passes away himself shortly after the opening in 1971, I want to say weeks maybe after the opening, he very much is determined to get at least the Magic Kingdom and a couple of the hotels that opened, the Polynesian, I think, opened in the Contemporary, right? Maybe it was those two. Opened in honor of his brother. Get those built.
And it should be stated that while there was friction, this was not a Shakespearean drama.
No. There was friction in terms of direction, but they were still loving brothers, and Roy still supported everything Walt did.
Absolutely, but he. But the simple fact is that Roy acknowledged that they were old men, and Walt didn't.
Yeah,
and I think Roy really understood that Epcot ultimately was going to need to be a project for the next generation of the company, and. Quite frankly, as much as we want to be starry-eyed and say, what a gorgeous concept, especially in this fractious, turbulent time that we live in, to have a giant community where there could still be this group of people that could come together, that could function as a unit. With the best elements of, futuristic 60s living and push society forward, which was Walt's dream. Roy was right. It was not feasible. His view was that Disney really didn't have the funding to reinvent American living all by itself. And I think originally Roy was kind of hoping that, like the World's Fair, Walt would sort of outsource elements of the Florida project to these giant conglomerates who could foot the bill. But what he noticed was that Walt, he was trying to get theme park attractions for free. But what he was also trying to do was to show himself and Roy that they had the talent to make physical structures like the Florida Project. And you got to understand that this was a situation where you had one brother that said, we're going to start an animation company. And another brother that said, how are we going to get the funding? Or, don't worry, just sit over there and dream and I'll find the money. A few years later, he says, we're going to make the first live action film, animated film. And Roy saying, who's going to sit for 70 minutes and watch that? All right, I'll find the funding. And on was that conversation. And now this was the next project. And the reality was that there was a part of Roy that was just tired of finding. and Walt was too physically diminished at that time to make it work. And so, that's one of the tragedies of Epcot. But moving forward, as we go further in this series, you'll notice that there's a reason why the two hosts of this series love Epcot so much. And that's right. Because it goes away from being a template for what Walt envisioned. And really, the state of Florida kind of takes ownership over Epcot. And it becomes a vision of how Florida sees the third century of American living. And so in some odd way, a little tiny piece of what Walt wanted still survives in Florida today in Epcot. And that is ultimately not the bricks and mortar that he was trying to assemble, but it was the vision that he was only able to express with his imagination.
So join us next week as we talk about the opening of Walt Disney World, the two hotels we mentioned, and the Magic Kingdom in 1971, weeks or months before Roy Disney himself passes away. But Roy determined to get that built for his brother, his brother's legacy. And then the week after, we are going to get into the planning and development and building of Epcot Center. So thank you for listening. Yay. Yay, for both of us. And we might be too geeky in that episode, warning to the listeners that maybe you all want to just skip that week. But we'll get into Epcot in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.